Welcome to the Florida Madcaps, your ultimate guide to experiencing fantastic and unique destinations across our magnificent state. Join us while we lead you on a journey of exploration, recreation, and conservation. The popularity of Florida's natural wonders is on the rise, and our mission is to be your go-to source for conscientious recreation. We encourage you to get out and explore these breathtaking sites, and to leave them even better than you found them, through individual actions and group advocacy. Join the Florida Madcaps as we discover the beauty of our incredible state together.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Florida Madcaps podcast. It's me, Ryan, aka the Florida Excursionist, and I'm here with the dynamic duo, the Florida famous, the Sunshine State Seekers.
Thanks for having us, Ryan.
That's Chelsea.
Howdy.
And that's Chris. So just a quick note, today we are recording outside at one of the historic Civilian Conservation Corps built pavilions at Goldhead Branch State Park. So if you hear breezes, wildlife noises, maybe some other recreators around, that's because we are truly outside.
We also have little Tory cooing in the background.
Oh, yes. This is our first episode. Post-birth, I guess. Is that what we call it?
Yeah, you know, what is that, PT?
Yeah.
Youngest member of the Sunshine State Seekers.
I know. I've hiked, dozen miles with him or something so far. He's been on just about every episode. But today, our topic is going to be not Goldhead where we're at, but it's Chautauqua. Chautauqua Springs, one of my favorite state parks in my top five. I absolutely love Chautauqua because there's so much to do there. Now, most of it is recreating, but there's so much more to the park than what it's known for is just tubing. So it has multiple springs. There's two that you can swim in. That's the head spring, which is Chautauqua Spring. And then the largest spring is about, a third of a mile hike from the north entrance parking area, and it's a first magnitude called Blue Hole. That is my favorite spring because there's a cave called the Jug that you can peer down into, and that's where all the water comes out at. And there's these fat mullet that kind of swim around, and they shimmer if it's nice and sunny. As you go down, that forms this crystal clear river, and there's no development on it at all. And that's what I love about it. As you go down, there's no houses, no nothing. There's a couple areas where you can get on and off the spring. You can launch at the north end if you're paddling. You can't be tubing or swimming. But there's going to be a kayak launch there. And as you reach midpoint, you can launch as a snorkeler or tuber or whatever you like. And then they have Dampers Landing, which is the south entrance parking lot, accesses the river there. And then you have the takeout, which is the southern point. I believe it's 3 miles total. But if you're on the river and you just tube, you're missing about half the river, and it is vastly different on the north end than the south because it just opens up. There's not a lot of tree cover, and there's a lot of channels and stuff. And we can hear a little Tory in the background.
Yeah, those craggy limestone walls. I remember those. So it was actually one of the first sort of dates, I guess, I went on with Chelsea. It was one of our first camping trips, and we stayed at the Chautauqua River Campground. And that's one thing that really stuck out with me was we were actually first in line because we were at the campground just to float down the river. But one of the things that really stuck out with me was those limestone walls.
Yes. There's some at the north end and some at the south. We're going to talk about more of the things here, but we have like a Mission Springs, or is an actual Spanish mission. And there's a lot of other history. But we also have a special guest who was a ranger there and worked there various capacities for 6 years. And who also wrote a coffee table book that has photographs, paintings, and reflections. But we have Mr. Steve Earle with us. Welcome, Steve.
Thank you. Thank you. Glad to be here.
Actually, we have this book right in front of us right now, but there's some beautiful pictures of the springs that normally don't have access to right now. Over time, they've closed some of them off. Mill Pond Spring and coffee springs and whatnot. Steve, how long did it take you to do the book? Because it's absolutely beautiful.
Probably 20 years, really.
Really?
Yeah. So I collected photographs for quite a number of years.
Really?
And then in probably 2008, I always wanted to do a book. But in 2008, I was encouraged to really pursue it. And basically what I did was I made a one-off book. So I knew that I could go into a publisher and hand them a handful of 4x6 photos from Walgreens with an idea, and maybe or maybe they wouldn't bite on that. But if I took in a book and just said, here, look at this, wouldn't you like to do this?
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I did. So I went to a service where you could have a book made, and made a one-off, walked in, pitched the idea, and the book kind of just spoke for itself, and the editor was like, yeah, we want to do that.
Wow. Was it close to its current form when you did that?
Pretty close. Wow. I mean, most of the photographs that are in the published version, I had in the mock-up, there were some differences, we tweaked it here and there, but yeah, by and large, what I showed them is, basically what we ended up with.
I know it's hard to talk about a book on a podcast, but there's a lot of photos of different flora and fauna and the different springs. At Etchetechne, do you have a spring that resonates with you the most?
Wow. I love them all, really, for different reasons. I don't know if I could just single out one spring. I have so many personal experiences with all of them, and I was fortunate at the time that I was living just adjacent to the north entrance of the park for quite a number of years. I was kind of a hippie in the woods, and I had a job, but it was flexible, and so I got to spend a number of hours each day, really, just exploring every inch of the park. So I knew it intimately, and just really kind of developed real personal, special relationships with all the different springs and areas of the park. And as far as my artwork goes, like the paintings, my approach to the paintings, did very little plein air. A few pieces I did plein air on site, but mostly I would go to the subject matter that I wanted to paint, and I would just hang out for a number of hours and just kind of do open-eyed meditation. I have a background in meditation, and so I would just become a sponge and just sit in silence and just become part of my environment, to the point that I had bobcats coming within 5 or 6 feet of me and drinking out of the spring right in front of me, because I posed no threat. I had become part of that scene. And so I would take in the scene for a number of hours. I would gather the water from the spring to paint the painting with, so that there's actually an element of place in the artwork. And I would go back to my studio and just let it all come back out in reverse.
Wow.
And that's my approach to this day with my art, with my painting.
It's funny. I was actually sharing some of my artwork with Ryan yesterday, and I did the same thing.
That is uncanny. I
collect water when hiking the Florida Trail, and I had this little mini watercolor set brought with me, and I, in the bottom, they had a, like a little flask that you could like.
You would send me down to get.
Yeah,
the,
I'd like go get this water.
Fill up the flask.
And yeah, it looks like a little. It's like a little plastic. You wouldn't want to drink out of it because it's gross. It's covered in dirt and watercolors and things like that. To have him collect water for me, and
but she would start the scene, kind of draw it out on when you were there, and then take the water and
from sometimes finish it
and finish
back,
it.
Yeah,
back at home or wherever.
Right.
That is so cool, though, to have the element of the actual scene in itself.
Not only the water, but I actually not only paint with traditional brushes, but I paint with elements from the environment. So I use Spanish moss and old man's beard and pine needle, like whatever is capable of making an impression or a stroke. I'll use those elements from the environment as well.
Wow.
I have to say, I love this map that's in the front of the book. It's probably my favorite part looking in it so far.
Yeah. So that actually is not my artwork. That is by an artist, Johnny Dame, which I think at some point you'll probably include in a podcast yourself. But I commissioned this piece, and basically the image depicts my story of living at Itch Tuckney. It's very specific. We use spring flowers, a spring scene, in order to depict rebirth and renewal, because we want the spring to continue for years and generations to come, for our children's children's children. You know, it shows my own children recreating in the head spring. They all learned to swim in the head spring. So each thing tells a tale.
That's a pretty iconic rock that's in the head spring, right?
It is.
I love all the trillium. Your photos of the trillium are beautiful.
Yeah. I love trilliums. This is a karst window that was on the property that I lived on, that I care took. So that actually was an entrance for Wes Skiles.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So one of the very first die trace studies done at Itch Tuckney, he went down that karst window. Exactly. Went down this karst window so small that he actually couldn't even wear the tanks on his back. He had to have side mounts and squeeze down.
No thanks.
And, wow.
And that's one thing I think we do all kinds of exploring, but one thing I don't think any of us really have done is any or too much diving.
Especially cave diving.
Scares the heck out of me. But good for those who love it.
Yeah. He was a legendary cave diver in Florida.
Yeah, Wes was a good friend of mine.
Oh, really? Yeah. He has a park named
after him. And he has Peacock Springs named after him.
Yeah, there's a lot of springs that are pretty interesting. There was an actual Spanish mission, and I was reading some history, and it was attacked by raiders from, I believe, Charleston, because there was a lot of raiding going on from South Carolina into Florida at that time, as they were trying to disrupt the Spanish mission system. There's a lot of springs at Itch Tuckney. Blue Hole is obviously my favorite. You got Devil's Eye, which is, it's unfortunately closed off. Mill Pond, where there was an actual mill at Mill Pond, was there not?
There was. Actually, a very similar situation as the mill that was here at Goldhead. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of a little hub of the community at the time in the late 1800s. So there was a mill, there was a little post office, there was a section adjacent, kind of diagonal from Mill Pond Spring that crossed the river, that where they actually had a kind of a suspension bridge where vehicles could go across.
Really?
Yeah. Most people don't.
Was that across the river or just a one to run?
There's actually a mural of it. I think it's on the Ace Hardware there in Fort White.
No kidding.
That depicts that. Yeah.
Did it go across like the spring run, or was it like the Itch Tuckney River itself?
The whole river.
No kidding.
Yeah. From the east side to the west side.
And that was close to Mill Pond Spring?
Mm-hmm. Just north of Mill Pond.
Okay. So for those of you who may not know, if you've been to Itch Tuckney and you go to the midpoint, so if you take the tram that goes upriver a little bit and drops you off and you kind of hike to this launch point, Mill Pond is just north of there. But it is inaccessible just to protect it, because it's very an ecologically sensitive area. Wow. And a suspension bridge. And you mentioned, when we were talking before the podcast, about a still that was out on the property somewhere.
Yeah. Kind of in the woods north of Blue Hole.
Okay.
There's the remnants of an old still.
Huh. Is there any stories that go along with it, or is that long lost?
I don't know any of the stories of that particular still. There was actually a still at this karst window as well, because the water, you know, was accessible.
Accessible water, and, you know, stills weren't really advertised as much because they were comparable to maybe meth labs today. I don't know. Wasn't a lot of people talking about them. You could get in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, you keep that on the down low.
But I love on the Itch Tuckney how if you're tubing from the north end to midpoint, it's a lot different than if you go from midpoint to south. So it is pretty good. Did you guys do the entire length of the river? when you were there?
We just did the tubing portion. Like, so we started wherever they let you in on the side there. And then it was just a couple of miles. And where we got out, I do recall there was sort of like a power station or something. And
yeah.
We had to walk alongside to get the tram to get back. Or the car, the tram took us up first. But we did the tubing run, basically.
Yeah.
And I really want to kayak it. We've been trying to figure out how to get up here and get a kayaks down there. But I know there's like a window where you can kayak because it's got to be outside of the tubing season.
Oh, but you can do it at any time. Yeah, we'll have to do it. You just bring your inflatable paddleboard, and then we could definitely do that.
I'm totally up for that.
Yeah, it is.
I'm sure it's a completely different experience than being in the tubes.
Yes, and I like going there when it's inconvenient or maybe a little bit chilly. If you do that, or if I launch right before they shut off the north end launch, that's where you get the river to yourself, mm-hmm. and there's just so much wildlife.
It ends at the Santa Fe, right? It empties into the Santa Fe?
Yes. Yes. I haven't done all the way down to the Santa Fe. After that, there are some houses in development. Steve, you've done it all the way down?
I have, yeah.
Is it a lot different after the takeout point?
Because of the house situation, yeah. I mean, there is an element that...
Is that where... Does it get more developed? Is that where you're...
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So more so the east side of the river, but there are even some houses on the west side. But the river's still beautiful, and there's still some unique features, and there's actually a few more springs on that section. As
really?
Well.
Mm-hmm. Is it still pretty clear, the color of the water itself, or does it start getting
volcanic?
It is,
yeah.
We mentioned Coffee Spring. It's highly fenced off and protected. It's near where you get out of the Itchituckney River and has a endemic snail.
There's a snail that, to this point, is only known to reside at this one spring. It's called the Itchituckney silt snail. It's a very small little fellow.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, I have not seen one, but I don't know. I'm not a much of a snail guy as far as identifying different ones. I can see snail eggs, but that's about the limitation of my experience.
The spring itself is really special. It's one of my favorites because it kind of ushers out of one of those lime rock outcroppings, and then it... There's exposed bedrock, lime rock bedrock, and the water just kind of cascades over these features, and there's usually some sound, you know, so it's very peaceful, you know, it's a great, great place to hang out. And I got to hang out there because, as I mentioned before, when Wes Skiles did the dye trace study, volunteers were stationed at different springs to take samples to mm-hmm. see when the dye would show up. And
yeah.
So I was assigned that spring and got to camp there overnight.
Wow.
So that was special.
That's really nice. Kind of, I guess, where you would look at the features of Florida, around this area of Florida where Itchituckney is close to Fort White and High Springs. And that's where the aquifer gets very close to the surface. So you're going to see a lot of limestone, as we talked about, that's along the side of the river.
Yeah, the karst topography.
Yes.
There's lots of it in this area.
And it's pretty much what Florida is underneath where we're standing. That's where the aquifer flows through. And
a lot of people get their drinking water.
And that's why we always want to protect the springs, right? That is a impressive feature. In my neck of the woods, I don't see that, a little bit east of there. The other thing is if you're tubing Itchituckney, you want to always have your head on a swivel because there's a lot of underwater trees. As they fall, the park staff really just doesn't remove them. They'll cut some of them away, but as they stay underwater, they can snag a leg or scratch you or whatnot. So you want to keep an eye out. I personally just snorkel. And when I do, I really have to keep a lookout of my surroundings at all time. Not only do I dodge tubers, but I also try and dodge getting, snagged by a tree. But I think that adds to the beauty of it. There's tons of wildlife. I saw a gator there for the first time. Last time I knew they were there, but
you never saw a gator before?
Not there. It was about a 4-footer. He wasn't a big guy or girl.
I believe there's some viral video that went around recently of a gator that was like right on a log that was floating. That I would say it got close to someone, but someone else got close to the gator.
Yeah, startled the tubers. I saw that.
Well, that was the Itchinotuckney too, right?
Yeah, it was the Itchinotuckney. Yeah. Like, he's coming for you.
He was just cruising down the river.
He was just sitting there. He wasn't coming for anybody.
It's gotten up to about 6 feet now.
Oh, wow. Yes, leave the gators alone. Definitely do not feed them. There's a few gar. I've seen some gar there. Last time I saw a lot of gar and countless turtles. You're going to see a turtle at Itchinotuckney, but there was a lot of smaller ones. Like
cuties.
Yeah, little tiny ones. Had some algae on them, but they were still very small.
I like turtles.
Yeah. Chris, you guys camped out on a campsite away from Itchinotuckney? Like, because they don't have camping at Itchinotuckney.
Yeah. So again, it was really early on in our explorations of the state, and we've kind of tended to stick to state park campgrounds because of their amenities now. I just saw that there was a reservation available at this, I think it's called the Itchinotuckney Springs Campground, and it's right around the corner from the entrance to the park. And the idea was that we were going to be right there when it opened up. We actually were like the first car in line just because we were so eager to
get to
the Itchinotuckney. Yeah, the campsite was okay. I mean, I guess we were on the little primitive camping area. I guess we had a tiny little tent, and again, very early in our explorations and learning any of this stuff, the fire pit was like an old tire, the inside of a tire, like a metal rim.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And
semi-rim.
Yeah, something like that, right.
Mm-hmm.
So we're like, okay, and we bought some firewood from the place, and it was in the middle of summer too, so it was very mosquito-y. Again, we weren't really sure what we were getting into, and we've learned many things since then. We put this wet firewood, didn't realize, even, and she's a master at doing fires now, but we tried for hours and hours to get this thing started, and then we ended up talking to the guy that sold it to us the next day. He's like, oh, yeah, the wood's wet. It's the summertime. It's been sitting out behind the shed here and been getting rained on. All you got to do, get some charcoal really hot and let the charcoal sit on it for like an hour. It'll light.
Oh, really? That's all it takes, huh?
Yeah.
No fat lighter. It sounds like you may need napalm.
So it was still a fun trip.
I think as soon as he got it lit, I'm like, I'm going to.
Yeah, it was. I did finally, after hours and hours, and I did the trick with the charcoal.
If
that's a trick. And and then finally it started flaming up, and Chelsea's like, I'm going to bed. Like, all right.
As someone who has a fireplace in their house that I enjoy using during the wintertime, green wood, I wouldn't even use it. It's
I definitely wouldn't sell it to somebody.
No. Yeah, Itchinotuckney's a great place. It has a lot of history. It has some trails. The most famous one is probably the one that goes to Blue Hole, that third of a mile trail, and it has some pretty interesting trees along the side of it that you can tell with like the little social trails going to them that people enjoy. There's also another trail that's near their kayak launch, and that one is pretty good. It goes out to overlook over the river. And last time I went there on that one, it was really nice and serene until I got to the river overlook and somebody was chilling out there, and they had a rather large dog that was unattended that did not take kindly to me being on the trail. But I didn't approach it. I just decided, well, good turnaround spot. So I went on my way. But Itchinotuckney is just a great park to visit. It's one of my favorites, as I said before, because there's no development on the river. It's so diverse from the north end of the midpoint. The midpoint's where you can swim, snorkel, and tube. And it is just a great time to go if there's not a lot of people around. If you're going between Memorial and Labor Day, you must plan ahead, especially on a weekend. Get there early, or you may not gain entrance to the park. When they get a certain number of tubers and paddlers in there, they'll shut it down for the day, and that's it.
Even when we were first in line, the tubers quickly caught up with us, and it was wall-to-wall tubing a lot of the time that we went down it. And that's one of the reasons I really want to explore it in a context where I can be in a kayak or something like that and really, really enjoy and take in the things around me, rather than, you said, like the submerged trees and then other people bumping into you. Mm-hmm. And it kind of took away from it, but it was still a pretty incredible experience. We've been back since. I think the kids swam in it one time, the head spring.
We haven't done the run since then, but yeah, we've visited the head springs a few times.
I want to explore more for sure.
Yeah, since you both were so kind to take me on the
Canaveral.
Yes, the bioluminescence paddle and brewery tour as well, which I really enjoyed. I will definitely return the favor by Itchituckney. I went there 3 years ago, almost to the day, and it was a really chilly morning with a cold breeze. And I got there at 8, and there was nobody. And I went down the river snorkeling. I did not see a person the entire time.
See, that's when people tell me, oh, Florida Springs are for the summertime and the trails are for the wintertime. I'm like, you reverse that and you're going to have maybe a little environmentally rough experience, but an experience all to your own. So hike in the summer and and visit our springs in the winter to just have them to ourselves sometimes.
When you get into a spring or a spring run in the wintertime too, one thing that a lot of people don't think about is that water stays close to the same temperature year round, so it's pretty cozy.
Yes,
once you get into the water.
Once you get out, that's
when you get out.
That's when you pay the piper.
On a kayak, on the water,
the heat comes off the water.
Especially we've noticed down the Suwannee River, which if you paddle up to one of the outputs, you feel the heat like coming out at
actually.
You.
Yes,
quite nice.
If you are a maniac and want to pick the three coldest days of the entire year, probably the three coldest days I've ever seen in Florida since I've been alive, and I'm a native Floridian, decide you're going to kayak the Suwannee River. Well, you're tough, and you're also a Sunshine State seeker.
It's like, this story sounds familiar. I'm not going to lie, because we talk about type 2 fun where it's not necessarily enjoyable at the time, but you look back on it and you're like, man, that was a good time. Even looking back on that experience, I'm like, that was awful.
We had it planned months in advance, and it just so happened to line up with the coldest day of the year.
Yeah, no, and I think one of our friends had an electric blanket, and she sharing with her and her boyfriend, and her boyfriend was like, no, she took it, and I didn't get any of it.
I just remember
it was a cold night.
I remember visiting you guys afterward, and I knew you were out there on those cold days, and I'm thinking, I don't think I could do it. And then I visited you afterwards, like soon afterwards.
Yeah, wasn't it New Year's? Was it New Year's or right before Christmas?
It was Christmas Day.
Christmas Day.
Christmas Eve and then Christmas Day.
We had three days with sub 32 degree temperatures, and I remember at night. Those were the lows. But anyways, we're getting close to time. Actually, we're at time. Steve, thank you for being on the podcast.
You're very welcome.
And so your book, Sacred Waters, I'll post a link in the show notes, but how can folks get it if they want a copy?
So it can be gotten directly from the publisher, which is University Press of Florida, or it's available through Amazon. It's in the bookstore at the Florida Museum of Natural History in Gainesville, Book Gallery West in Gainesville, Barnes & Noble.
So, okay.
Yeah.
Widely circulated, so it shouldn't be too hard to get it, but we'll post a link to one of those purveyors of the book. Thank you so much, Steve, and this has been a great experience out here, and it's a beautiful day at Goldhead where we're out under that classic pavilion recording. As always, everyone, enjoy Florida responsibly.
Thank you for listening to the Florida Madcaps. We hope today's episode was enjoyable. Your input is important to us. If there is a topic that you would like to know more about, please let us know. The Florida Madcaps is presented in partnership with the Florida Springs Council, the only nonprofit advocacy organization focused solely on protecting our Florida Springs. Get a free spring sticker and join the Florida Springs Council at floridaspringscouncil.org/madcaps. As a token of our appreciation, we are giving away a free Madcap sticker to anyone who leaves us a review. All you have to do is send us your contact information to the email provided in our show notes. We will take care of the rest. Thank you for being a part of the Florida Madcaps community.